Okay, let's look at the beginning. Eile toldot Noach. Noach ish tzadik. Tamim haya b'toratav. Et Elokim hitalech Noach. Shuli, I'm very impressed. Your eyes are still good. You can read this. Give it a couple of years. Now, Noach is somebody who... Well, he's a great person. I mean, did I need to stress that he's a great person?
No.
Of all the people in Tanakh, how many of them are called tzaddikim? How many people in all of Tanakh have ever been called, oh, this person is a tzaddik? Over here it says, Eile toldot Noach, these are the generations, or so Arya Kaplan preferred to translate this as the chronicles. Eile toldot Noach, these are the chronicles. Ariella, how would you translate it? Generation or chronicles? Chronicles, she likes. Eile toldot Noach, these are the chronicles of Noach. I guess if it's a television show, that sounds a little bit better. Noach ish tzaddik. Noach is a righteous man. By the way, no qualification. There is no qualification there. I know that all of you, in his generation, no, there's no qualification the way it's written in the Torah. Tamim haya bidorotav. No, almost. Tamim haya bidorotav. Now, there is a question what the word tamim means. Tamim can either mean, how would you, I don't know, you tell me what it means, tamim, tam. Good. It could be perfect. It could be innocent. By the way, it makes a big difference. It also makes a big difference which generation you live in if somebody calls you innocent. Right? Innocent can either be a good thing or it can be a terrible insult, yes. Yes, that's interesting.
Yaakov.
And Yaakov Ishtam. And by the way, there are some commentaries in the Gadda, the Tam, that's Yaakov. But it also may come down to our bias. What is Tam something good, or Tam something bad? The general interpretation of the Haggadah, you are absolutely correct, would be an indication of something which is not positive, certainly not when compared to the Chacham. And he actually pales a little bit to the Rasha also, but that's for different biases, because we tend to like the Rasha. But the Rasha is more impressive, because the Rasha is deeper. The Rasha is saying something which is more incisive. Although, what's so bad about being Tam? An Ish Tam today would be considered to be somebody who... So that's where it's interesting, that some of you think it's good, some of you think that it's bad. But we all know that if you call somebody innocent, did you just now give them a compliment or an insult? Yeah.
Also, how do you define tzaddik? Because there's the famous statement, the second temple was destroyed, even though there were a lot of tzaddikim and hasidim, but not enough yesharim, right?
Right.
So the way we define tzaddik today was clearly not the way we defined previously.
Correct. Well, the word tzaddik also needs a definition, yes.
It also depends on the context. If it's a lineup at a police station, and you say, that man is innocent, very good.
Right. By the way, American courts never find anybody innocent. Right, either guilty or not guilty. Nobody's ever found innocent. So you're right. To be yes.
Here, my grandchildren still have an innocence. When I was growing,
that's what you think, but okay.
So things still are enjoyed to them because they have that innocence.
Okay, but when we read the text itself, and I actually went out of my way to photocopy for you, which you don't have yet, the way the ta'amim, the way they're written in the Torah, it's Eile toldot Noach, these are the chronicles of Noach, Noach ish tzaddik, that's a phrase. Noach is a righteous man, no qualification. Tamim haya bedorotav, he was either perfect in his generation or innocent in his generation. Which means the qualification of generation is not on him being a tzaddik. The qualification of in his generation is on him being Tam. By the way, despite what I just now said, and there's no question about this, Rashi doesn't understand it that way. Rashi says, oh, tzaddik, right? Bidarotav haya tzaddik, and had he lived in a different generation, he wouldn't have been tzaddik. Why Rashi does that, that's your homework. You can try to figure that out. But it's certainly not what the text itself says. So why he parses it the way that he does is, I'll leave that as a question. Okay, I'm gonna come back to the problem with Noach and his relative saintliness, because Noach has actually two negative aspects to him. One is what Rashi leads us to, and that is the inevitable comparison with Avraham, which, by the way, had there never been an Avraham, had there never been a Yitzchak Yaakov, meaning had the story never continued the way that it did, it's just right. Shem Cham V'Yafed, and Noach is the... So would Noach really get the negative rap still if there were never an Avraham to compare him to? Which means, is it that Noach suffers because at the end of the day, he is not as great as other prophets or who are going to come afterwards, or Jewish prophets, which is really the way the Midrash and later on the Zohar articulate, and it's the comparison which bothers them. But there's really another negative thing which I'm not going to get to yet. Nancy. Right. The only other tzaddik in Bereshit is Yosef, who's not called a tzaddik in Bereshit. It's only by looking at the Haftorah, B'michram, when you sold a tzaddik, and so we assume that the Haftorah, which is used there, is referring to Yosef, so that's how Yosef is called a tzaddik. But as I said, Noach is the only one who's called a tzaddik, and even that, yes, Rashi tries to knock it down a little bit. Okay. I'm not going to go that much further on what it is that makes Noach into a tzaddik. What I'd rather deal with today is the impression that Noach had, and first and foremost, upon his father. But let's get there in a moment. Source number one, you see our first verse, Ode to Noach. Source number two is at the very end of Bereshit. Vayinachem Hashem ki asa et ha'adam ba'aretz. God regretted that he had made man on earth. V'yit'atzev el libo. And there was a sadness or pain. Which one do you prefer? V'yit'atzev, you prefer sadness or pain? V'yit'atzev el libo, there was a sadness on his heart. Now, the first thing I want to point out, and this may be of no significance whatsoever, is the word v'yinachem has the word Noach inside it. Okay, just notice that Noach is right there. V'yit'atzev el libo, we're going to see in a moment why v'yit'atzev, or the sadness of God, is significant as well. V'yomer Hashem, and God said, Emche et ha'adam asher barati, I'm going to wipe out the man that I created, me'al p'nei adama, upon the face of the land, me'adam ad behema ad remes v'ad of ha'shamayim, ki nichamti ki asitem. I'm going to wipe out all of creation, because I regret that I made them. By the way, again, you notice the word nichamti, and you notice Noach there. V'noach matzachin b'nei Hashem. And Noach found favor in God's eyes, and of course you all noticed immediately that the word chen is the same letters as Noach. Chen, well,
right.
It's But, okay, we'll come back to that in a moment. And chen is the same letters as Noach, but just reversed. So Noach, and what does chen mean? Chen is a great word. What is chen? We like grace? Jews like grace? I mean, the Midrash goes out of its way to talk about Esther, when it uses the word chayin, that this was something special. This is what Jewish girls have. Jewish girls have chayin. I don't know if it's the same as innocence, by the way. But it's chayin. Chayin. Kabbalistically, chayin is chachmat nistar, knowledge of the mystical. And in the army, chayin was the chel nashim, which is also interesting that they... So let's go back a little bit further now. Source number three, again, we're just going backwards now. Here's where Noach is born. V'yichi Lemech shtayim u'shmonim shana ma'ad shana v'yolid ben. Lemech lived a long time and he had a kid. V'yikra et shmo Noach, and he called him Noach. Lemor, in order to say, ze yinachamenu mima'asenu. What does that mean? This one, now you go to the comfort. This one will bring us comfort, right? Nechama. Have a better word for nechama than comfort?
Consolation.
Mima'asenu, from our actions. Umi'itzvun yodenu. What's mi'itzvun mean? From the etzeh, from the sadness of our hands, which is a very strange turn of phrase. Mina adama. Asher Hashem, from the land which God has cursed. Okay. Could be that that all fathers have hopes of their child, till they disappoint them later on, of being great people. I once heard a professor Dan of Jewish mysticism in Hebrew University, once observed that in Judaism, all the false messiahs were always men without children. That once they have the children, then they realize they're really not the Messiah anymore. That Lemach, Noach's father, really has great hopes for him. Now, this is just an interesting thing that he's saying. I want to go into his naming and his thought process of naming, and then, of course, the comparison to the verse that we just seen afterwards. But... did every father give a name to his child like this? And Lemech is the only one that we know of. Is Lemech prophesizing? Or is Lemech praying? And this is something which the commentaries are going to grapple with. But look at his name again. Vayikrachmo Noach, he calls him Noach Lemo Zei Nachamenu, which means the name Noach is somehow related to the consolation, to the Nechama. The consolation that Noach is going to bring in. But it's not. But again, you can't stop right there. Ki nachamen, it's giving consolation from something. What's the consolation from? Mima asenu, from our actions. But which actions is he going to bring us comfort from? Umitzvun yadenu, and from the sadness of our hands, min adama asher Hashem, from the land which God has cursed. Which means his hopes about Noach is he's going to fix something which has been broken, and it sounds very much something which has been broken going all the way back to the Garden of Eden. Meaning, is this really foreshadowing the flood? It's very nice to say so, but it just doesn't seem to have any support of that. Now when you compare the verse in Source 2, Vayinachem Hashem ki asa et ha'adam ba'aretz v'yitatzev el libo, you realize how close that verse is to this verse when Noach's father names him. Of course, the same words appear in both of these verses. Vayinachem, which is being used in a different way, and v'yitzatzev is the same as the mi'itzvon, which means the sadness over here is being used in both. So it's interesting to what extent God now is playing off this, and even there, v'noach matzachen. In source number four, and we're going to look at a couple of midrashim now, and see how the Midrashim try to address, I'm not going to say the textual problem yet, although there is a problem. The problem really is, what's the Itzvun Yadenu? What does that have to do with anything? It should have just said that he's going to help heal the world from the sadness in the world or from the pain in the world. Why me Itzvun Yadenu? Why from the pain of our hands? Why is the word hands over there in that verse? And by the way, that's something that we're not going to solve until, or I won't say we won't solve, but we're going to keep on trying to solve. That's the main problem today. If you want to know what the problem is, it's that one word. Why does Noah's father, when he names him, say that he's going to bring us comfort from the sadness of our hands? Why are our hands not happy? I don't know. We have to work. Okay, so let's take a look. First of all, in source number four, the Midrash Agadah, Zein Achamenu Ma'asenu, Shlo Yuchoshim Ki Im Be'etzpotehem. What were they lacking?
Tools.
They were lacking tools. And how were they working? They were working with their hands. So why was his father upset? His father was upset that everyone's got to work, everyone's got to work with their hands, and it's a little hard to work with your hands. One second. It's a little hard to work with your hands, and therefore this was going to be the one who's going to bring us about some comfort for this. Now, of course, there is a problem with this interpretation, that they had tools.
Yeah.
Tools were introduced way before this. We already had... What? Yeah, it's a tools for plowing. We're already introduced at an earlier juncture. So that is a little bit... Look at source number 15. I'm sorry I didn't put the English there. Vitzila, this is Perek Dalet Pasuk Kafbet, chapter 4, verse 22. Vitzila gam hi yoda etu valkayin lotesh kol choresh nechoshet ubarzel. So Tuval Kayin was the one who made all of these tools, and Tuval Kayin's sister was Ne'ama. By the way, according to rabbinic tradition, Ne'ama was Noach's wife. So therefore, maybe by the time Noach was born, we're just not in the proper sequence, maybe by the time Noach was born, they didn't have it yet, and maybe Noach went into competition against his brother-in-law. Listen, it's happened before. His brother-in-law was the inventor, and he rips him off afterwards, which is a whole other side point of the whole generational flood. But again, even though there was a verse earlier that stated it, it doesn't mean that it already was in existence at this point. So I'm just don't get fooled on that. In source number 5, there's the Midrash from the Psikta. I'm sorry this is not translated, but I will go through it slowly. Vayikrat shmo Noach. He called his name Noach. L'mafrei achen. So you notice now, the Psikta noticed what we noticed, that Noach and Chen are the same thing. And that, what does the word Noach mean? We know why he called him Noach. Why? Because he wants to bring comfort. What does he say it means? That Noach indicates, this would probably be more what we call a remez, that Noach is an indication of Chen. What's Chen? We've discussed this already. What's Chen? Lemar. What does it mean saying when he's named? Lemar l'dorot haba'im. It's forward directed. Zein nachamenu. He's going to bring comfort. B'shnei ta'amim. L'fisha matzachim b'tachtonim u'v'elyonim. That Noach found Chen, grace, among those above and those below. By the way, we have no indication whatsoever that Noah got along with his generation. Quite the opposite. He was probably beat up a lot by them. Dover acher, yinachamenu ma'aseinu, and therefore the Midrash gives us another attempt. Kishenivra Adam harishon, hishlitu al hakol. Adam had complete control over everything. V'kevin shachata, and when Adam sinned, Hamaridan HaKadosh Baruch Hu al b'nei ha'adam shor lo nishma l'choresh. That initially Adam had control over all creation, and afterwards the animals rebelled. Remember the beautiful description of Adam in the Garden of Eden, and he gives names to all the animals? It sort of gives this impression now from this Midrash that not only does he give names, Adam is one with all of nature. And all of nature obeys Adam. The rebellion takes place, according to this Midrash, only as a consequence of the sin. At that point, man and nature are no longer as connected as they would have been or they were in the Garden of Eden. Yes. It then gives a very interesting, again, evidence to this point. Kaven Sheba Noach Chazar v'hishlitu aleihem. Noach then gains control of the animals again. Lekach nemar zeyinachamenu. Therefore it says this one is going to bring us comfort. And therefore the verse says, regarding Shabbat, leman yanuach sharcha v'chamorcha. And what does the word yanuach mean? In order that you rest. That you will rest and your animals will rest. So it's making a play on words here, Noach's name, and Yanuach, and rest. That when it says by Shabbat that you rest, there's an indication that Noach, and this is known within certainly Kabbalistic literature that Noach is Shabbat. Where is, how is Noach connected to Shabbat? Noach never kept Shabbat in his life. What does Noach have to do with Shabbat? Because it says L'man Yanuach Shorcha, because it understands the name Noach as rest, which, by the way, is clearly not what his father had in mind. But over here, it's giving this picture of Noach as being somebody. I mean, how did Noach get all the animals? So Noach is like this Pied Piper, right? And all the animals follow him off to the ark. So what the Midrash really here is asking, it says, therefore, is Noach therefore the greatest man who had ever lived till this point? Or how does Noach really compare to Adam before the sin? So what this Midrash is trying to say is that Adam before the sin was the same thing like Noach, but that's something which was then lost, and now Noach regains it. And who's the one who realizes that he's going to regain this? That's his father, who says, Zeyeh Nachamenu. That's what this Midrash is saying. A little bit further, gives yet another interpretation of Noach's name. Rabbi Lezer M. Omer, Noach l'shum karbano nikra. Noach is called Noach because of the offering that he's going to bring. Shenemar, as it says, v'yarach Hashem et reach hanichoach, that the end, afterwards, when he builds the altar, and God smells the pleasant smell. By the way, nichoach, pleasant, is the same word Noach in terms of pleasantness. So he's saying over here, no, that's who Noach really is. He's the first one who brings an offering, other than the ones before. He's the one who brings an offering, which is l'reach nichoach l'Hashem. I do want to point something out about this korban. And this is a side point. Should I point it out? I'll point it out quickly. Biblical critics have noticed that initially, when Noach is called to bring the animals, initially he brings two of two, and then afterwards he brings seven of seven. When he brings two of two, the name of God which is utilized there is Elohim. Later on, when he brings seven, the name of God which is utilized is Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. Look at the Gemara in source number 6, Tanya Rav Shimon ben Azai. Bor e maktiv beparshat korbanot. He goes, notice something that wherever korbanot are mentioned in the Torah, Shalone Amar Bahen, it never uses the name of God, Lo Kel Velo Elokim, Ela Hashem. Only Yud Kei Vav Kei is used in the context of korbanot, of offerings. Shaloli ten pitchon pe lebal din lechlok. I'm not going to go into deeper understanding of why he's saying this, but I do want you to appreciate that this observation of Ben Azai is even consistent within the division within Noach. He brings the two animals, two of two, for survival. He brings the seven for the offerings. So if the seven for the offerings and the name of God that has to be used over there is the Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. The ones for survival, that's Elohim, that's Midat Hadin. God is going to destroy the world, but let the basic survival take place. So this division over here, again, this is what Bible critics do, is they look at the Torah without theology. When you take theology away from the Torah, you have a book which one can attack in all kinds of ways. When you notice that there's actually a theology and a consistent theology running all the way through, so at that point, of course, there's going to be two different instructions because they're for two different purposes. The two different purposes, and as I said, this is very consistent throughout the text. So over here as well, Noach bringing the korban, that is an essential part of who Noach is. Noach actually, it's like two different parts of what he brings onto the ark. One is survival, and two is to serve God. That is not the same thing. And God gives him both commands. One is you have a command to survive, and two, you have a command to serve God. Bring the two animals for survival. Bring the seven, because serving God is something which is essential as well, and that's also something that you have to save. So when you go off, you know, to your cruise, what do you take with you? You take provisions, and you take a chumash, or you take a book to read as well, because you need not just in order to survive in terms of food, you need to survive as well in terms of spiritual survival. No. I believe so. I'll come back to that soon as well. Hopefully. Rashi, and this goes all the way back to his father's naming of him in source 7, and you have this in English as well on the next page. Zeyenachamenu, yonach mimenu et etzvon yodenu, ad shelo banoach lo yilem klimach risha v'hu ichin lahem. So Rashi also is apparently aware of Tuval Kayin having, I mean, not apparent, Rashi's obviously aware of that, but Rashi wants to say that till this point, Tuval Kayin Again, I'm just explaining what Rashi doesn't say. Till this point, Tuvalkayin apparently has not yet invented these tools, and maybe he beat him to it. But his father is praying that Noach should be the guy to, but that's very funny, because if he's really praying that he should solve this problem, so you just solve the problem yourself. So, Naomi, there are thinkers in the world. Some of us are thinkers. We don't do things, we think. We leave it to the others to actually do things. The Ibn Ezra in Source 8 says, the Ibn Ezra says right here, Lamech was a Navi. Lamech was a Navi when he names Noah. He says he's going to bring us comfort, and he does, because there's... By the way, I could argue the opposite. He didn't bring us comfort. He brought us a flood. May Noah zod. He brought us a flood. But still, Ibn Ezra is looking at it, I guess, I don't want to say the cup half full, because I guess the flood is half full. And therefore, he sees this as he's the one who brought comfort, he's the one who brought survival, and therefore Noach, and therefore Lamech must have been a Navi. By the way, there is no other source, as far as I could tell, prior to the Ibn Ezra, of saying that Lamech was a Navi. There are sources prior to the Ibn Ezra saying he wasn't a Navi, but there's no source prior to the Ibn Ezra saying that he was a Navi, but it's interesting how people perhaps get a little bit confused. Take a look at the Rashbam in source number 9. Zeyin Achamenu, this one's going to bring us comfort. Shezeya Rishon Lenolodim Achar Mitat Adam. That's very interesting. He claims, and I did not check the math on this, you can do this if you want more homework, he claims that Noah was the first child born after Adam had died. So go through all the... Yeah, Noah was the first child after Adam had died, and he said, this is going to be one who's going to bring us comfort. What he said it is as a prayer, not as a prophecy. In the second to the last line, he writes, "Aval l'shem," that's shame chaman yafet. Shame lo shach l'meim alashon tefila and alashon nivi'ut. But shame when he names his son Peleg. By the way, don't correct me. Shame did not have a son, Peleg. When Shame names his son Peleg, this is during this generation there will be a division, Peleg, Dur Haflaga, there it had to have been a prophecy. So here he says, Shame was a prophet, but Lamech was not a prophet. But by the way, what's interesting about these two sources, the Ibn Ezra and the Rashbam, is they both bring some confusion. One is Ibn Ezra claiming that he was a Navi, and two, Rashbam claiming that Leshem had a son named Peleg, because he didn't. He had a grandson named Peleg. If you look at... If you look at source 11, Chaim Paltiel writes him, Kevin Sh'amar Navi Gadol Haya Ever Shekara Livno Peleg. That's correct. Ever. So, generally, they avoid calling Lamech a Navi. Now, look at source number 12. Here's where it gets interesting. This is the Pirush of the Rush, who's going to quote a tradition. The Rush, if we're not aware, is one of the Balei HaTosfot. The tradition he's going to tell us was well known by the Balei HaTosfot. Those of you who don't know this, just like we have Rashi and Tosfot on the Gemara, on the Torah as well, not only do we have Rashi and Tosfot, we have lots of different commentaries of people who come from the Tosfot school. There's lots of these commentaries about, and sometimes they're very similar with one another. And there's a lot of interesting material there. The next three sources here, 12, 13, and 14, are all from this school. All of them coming from the Tosfot school in one way or the other. Source 12, Pirush HaRash. Zeina chamenu maaseinu, Kabbalah haita biyadam. They had a tradition, shelo tifsok haklala, that the curse will not be over. Which curse? The curse of Adam, the curse of the land, would not be over ad sheyulad Adam mahul, until a child is born circumcised. But Noach nolad mahul. Amru zeina chamenu, and Noach is born circumcised. Now, the reality is, there's nothing in the text that led us in this direction. Why is he explaining this? I'm not saying he's the first one to say this, but I'm saying, why is he saying this? He's saying this is because of the oddity of the father of Noah, Lamech, being the first one to point at his son and say, ah, here comes the special one. Here comes the golden child. Here, there's something different about him. So again, is this simply a prayer that he has? Or is there something which is far deeper taking place? So over here, what could they possibly have seen? So it's okay, he must have been born circumcised. This is a theme that you find by a number of people. He's not the only one. By Moshe Rabbeinu, by others, you find the same kind of thing. Oh, he was born circumcised. Of course, later on, circumcision is something which is prominent to Jewish tradition. Noach, I don't know if you know this, was not even Jewish, and therefore by taking circumcision and putting it back by Noach is certainly an interesting comment, but that's the first thing that he says. That's not the interesting one, by the way. It's the next part, which is interesting. Nimtza b'shem Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. It's found, really means I've heard, there's a tradition that we have from Yehuda HaChassid. Shekodim shenolad Noach, lo hayalahem pisuk etzpaot. Their fingers were not separate. By the way, you can call this opposable thumbs if you want. V'hoyu choshim b'yedehim. And they used to plow with their hands, literally. V'noach nolad b'chiluk etzpaot. And Noach was born with separated fingers. V'lo hayabo koach l'chosh b'yadav. And Noach was unable to plow with his hands. By the way, this is fascinating, because of course, I'm not allowed to say the word evolution. I'm not allowed to say the word evolution because rabbis are not allowed to say that. But in terms of evolutionary theory, it's the opposable thumb. I mean, that's the important thing. And I know the real reason that you need it because you can't learn Gemara without an opposable thumb, and there never would have been any brisker svaras unless you could go like this. Right. I mean, think about that. But over here, it's claiming that before Noach, everybody's hands were stronger and they can plow with their hands. And Noach was born with a birth defect. Noach's birth defect was that his fingers were separate. And of course, his fingers were separate, he wouldn't be able to. His father's looking at his poor kid. This, he's not going to be able to plow with his hands. He's going to need a tool. I mean, by the way, which goes back to this whole tool thing over here, because look at this kid's disability over here. By the way, that's a very important comment about disabilities. I mean, I won't go into this more than necessary, but especially in terms of learning, there are so many disabilities which are not disabilities. There are abilities in other areas, just that our schools are very, very bad, and our schools only look for some very narrow abilities. And there are wonderful kids who have abilities in all kinds of other areas, and we tell them that they have disabilities instead of focusing on the wonderful abilities that they do have. I won't talk about this. You'll pay the psychologists and psychiatrists lots of money on this one. But it's interesting. Again, is this pro evolution or anti evolution? Okay. Yeah. So this I'm going to get to some more evolutionary or counter evolutionary sources in a moment.
Whether it's pro or anti, it is suggesting evolution. Whether it was a good thing or a bad thing, it's suggesting change.
Yes, absolutely. Look at source 13. Hadar Zakenim, Zainachamenu, Hilal Lakro, Menach. 1 second, I'll skip that. Im Tomar, Maivahu. Yeah. Yesh Lomar, in the middle of the second line, Yud Lamed, Yesh Lomar, Ra'asha Hailo Pisuk Etzpaot. He saw that he had separated fingers. V'kol Rosheha Etzpaot Dvukot Yachad. I have no idea what this means. He's saying that the fingers were separate, but the heads of the fingers were together. And then he also suggests he's the first one born after Adam Rishon. Again, so simply another person who brings up the same tradition. Source 14, Paneach Raza. I gave you around three lines in very little fonts who he was. Rav Yitzchak ben Yehuda Halevi lived in France, wrote at the end of the era of Tosfot. His grandfather was Shmuel of Paliza, a prominent Bala Tosfot. He wrote a comment to the Torah called Paneach Raza, which is collected in teachings of hundreds of Bala Tosfot, most of whom are accredited by name. Ve'yikrachmo Noach. Tema, lama lo mer chazal v'shvil kach alash alav shenavi gadol haya ka'amram al ever b'kuro levno peleg. Why doesn't it tell us that he was a Navi? So it goes back again to this idea that he must have prayed. I'm skipping a line. Uv midrash avchir, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Amru Shakola Noladim Kodim Noach. Now he gave us a source to this. Not just Yehuda Chassid said it. There is a midrash that brings down this teaching. Kodim Noach Yu Yudeim Adukot Shlemot Mibli Pirud V'chiluk Etzpaot Kilo Yutzrichim La'avod Adama, because they didn't have to work the land. But Noach Nolad Im Chituch Etzpaot. Noach was born with fingers. Umizeh Hivin Lemech She is at Sarich Lakach La'avod Adama, and therefore he understood something about that he'll have to work the land. Sha'ad Ata Hayelunu Etziv Yadayim. By the way, do you realize that all of these interpretations I'm telling you go all back to in source number 3 when his father says, Zeyinachamenu, this one's going to bring us comfort, mima'aseinu umi'itzvun yodeinu, from the sadness of our hands. It all goes back to that one word, hands, over here. So now we find those, like Rashi, who are telling us that what was it that Noach did? That Noach was the one who his father hopes, at least, will create tools. And now we find another, again, I say perhaps evolutionary explanation, that before Noach, nobody had fingers. His father looks at him and says, oh, he's going to bring us comfort from our hands. But that's just a very funny thing to say. But it seems to be a sense that Noach is going to have different capabilities of everybody beforehand. So again, we saw those who say it was circumcision they noticed. Oh, that's why he's special. But that would have taken, again, knowledge of later on that circumcision is something which is spiritually significant. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So as I said, anybody who gave interpretation of circumcision, again, it's using later knowledge that we then have and moving it back over here. Correct, which would have been such an easy thing to say, but his father brought the land which was cursed into the discussion. By the way, source 17 is the Medrash Tanchuma, sidesteps the entire problem and says something which, again, if you like, you can read this back into the text. He claims that it was not his father who gave him the name, it was rather God gave him the name. But Yikra wasn't talking about his father. That was the last verse. By the way, this is not an easy claim. It's not an easy claim. The Ilu Zocha Dorota Hayakodesh Baruch Hu Koresh Motam, and certain people God called them by name, Kishem Shekor La Adam V'Chava, as God named Adam and Chava. By the way, God did not name Chava. Hold on one second. It claims here that who gave Chava her name? Oh. Right. So over here, the Midrash says that. Just because it says something in Hebrew fonts doesn't mean, right? Just right. When something says kosher, remember, it doesn't necessarily that it means that it is. He then correctly points out that Avraham got his name Avraham from God, Yaakov got his name Yisrael from God. But just look over here. But by the way, who called Yaakov is also not clear. But Yikreshmo Yaakov, you can take a look at that. Over here in this midrash, it claims. He called him Noach. So over here, what the Midrash Tanchum is suggesting, the he should be with a capital H. Again, if you think this is a simple reading the text, I don't. But as I said, this tries to push aside the entire problem, so therefore it's not his father, who may have been a prophet. Source number 18, Midrash Yilamdeinu, V'yikrachma Noach v'chi Navi haya? Was he a prophet? Amar Rav Shimon lomdim hayu, Shabishah Shem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Adam Arur Adama, Amar Lefaner Ribono Shel Olam Ad Matai, Amar Lai Ad Sheyolad Adam Mahul. Here's the source for that, till somebody is born circumcised. By the way, this Midrash asks, was Noach's father a prophet? It says, no. So who's the one who said he was a prophet? Ibn Ezra. By the way, later people quote it, said, Kamo Shechazal Amru, as Chazal said. So I just want to point out, Chazal don't say it. Chazal actually say he wasn't a prophet. The first one who said he was a prophet was Ibn Ezra, and the Midrash actually says he wasn't a prophet. Look, it's two lines from the bottom. Kodim Shenolad Noah, Hayu Zorim Chitim V'Ktzarim Kotsim V'Darehem. Beforehand, they would plow, but they would get thorns and thistles in their hands. Kevin Shalad Noah Chazar Olam Liyishuvo. When Noah was born, the world returned back to the way it was before the world was cursed. By the way, this is the opposite of evolution. Zorim chitim v'katsrim chitim. Here, they would actually be effective in their plowing. Sarim v'katrim sarim. La'od ela ad shenolad Noach osin melacha b'yedehem. Till Noach was born, they used to do all the work with their hands. L'kach ne'mar u'mietzvon yadenu. And again, going back to the hands. Nolad Noach hitkin lehem achreshot v'kardumot u'migalot v'chomine melacha from the Yilam Deinu. But so this is fascinating. This is claiming to us that Noach was a great agriculturalist and Noach was the one who created all this. And I'm going to put this on the side for 1 second. We're going to come right back to it.
How could they say that the Chalav Adam just goes away?
Well, what it wants to say, it says that you will, when you plow, you'll get thorns and thistles. And once again, that's all they got. Of course, there would have been some kind of problem in terms of their diet afterward had they not been able at all to eat any kinds of produce. Hold on just 1 second. As far as our evolution or counter-evolution, there's just two more sources I want you to see, just so that you'll see them, and then I want to get to my main point. Look at source number 19, back when Adam is created. V'hi Adam l'nefesh chaya, Rabbi Yehuda omer melamed she'os lo oketz kechaya. The word oketz may not be clear to you, that when Adam was created, it says here that Adam had a tail. This is the source for, if you ever heard anybody say it, so now you have it. This is it. That Adam had a tail. V'chazav v'lachom imenu pnei kvodo. And God took it away in order to make Adam different from the animals. So there's Adam starts off with a great similarity to animals, has a tail even, and the tail is taken away. However, the flip side of this is another Midrash Rabbah, again, same source, source number 20. Uleshet gam hu yolad Yulad ben v'yikrat shmo Enosh, v'avon komi Abba Kohen Bardala Adam Shet Enosh v'shatak. Amar imkein b'tzelum v'dut nikan v'eilech netkal luha delot v'nivra kinet torin. That certain people, it says, when they were born in God's image. And certain people didn't say it. So it says, so in those generations that were cursed, how were people born? They were kinet torin. Anybody know what kinet torin is? Well, the English over here translated as centaurs. Those of you who don't know what it is, I have the Greek and the over here for you on the bottom. A mythological creature with the head, arms, and torso of human, the body and legs of a horse. Once they, when after man sinned, he reverts back to an animal-like existence. Arbid verim nishtanu b'yimei enosh ben sheit, harim na'asu tarshim, v'tchil hamet marchish, v'nasu pneihim kikofot. That when man had sinned and man had been degraded spiritually, man's face took upon the look of monkeys. By the way, I just want to again point out, this is the opposite of, and oh no, look at the Midrash's evolution, it's the opposite. It says that man became monkey-like because of man's behavior. So over here, again, you do have this about the, but although man's, Adam starts off and he has a tail, what we see one thing over here, which I think should be clear to you, and that is, the interplay between the animal and the human sometimes a little bit more than makes us comfortable, and it seems to be what the distinction between man and animal is our being cognizant of God, and when we're cognizant of God, then we become more human-like, and when we are not cognizant of God, then we become far more animal-like.
Oh, I see. This is more symbolically speaking, that man is an animal, not that it was physically an animal.
Right. But what's interesting still is Noah and his hands. Now I want to get back to the main point, which we have 2 minutes or so to get to. And that's on page 5 and 6. You don't have it. We always hold out the good things. Anyway, let's think a little bit more about Noah. I want to think specifically more about Noah in terms of Noah's career as a man of the field. Noah went into, meaning Noah has 2 stages of his life. One stage of his life, he deals with animals, and the other and that's based upon God's command. And the other stage of his life, he deals with fauna, if you will. Fauna? Flora. Flora. So why are you agreeing with me? Flora. He deals with flora. By the way, Adam has the same issue in his life. Adam gives names to the animals, and then, then the curse comes in. Noah's career of working with his vineyard did not work out all that well for him. I remember I said before, there were 2 things about Noah which is negative. One thing about Noah which is negative is the comparison with Avram. The other thing about Noah which is negative is him ending up drunk and naked on the floor. That's not a good thing for a tzaddik's image. That's not a good... So I'm saying that's the really... The negative part of Noach is this like last scene that we see him on the floor in a very compromised situation. And I think that that's really the... Again, that's the interesting thing about Noach, which means Noach spends the time with the animals, he's called a tzaddik, then Noach goes back to the field. And by the way, according to the Zohar, Noach's reverting back to the field and specifically reverting back to the vineyard is absolutely connected to the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Which means, I mean, that's the way the Zohar understands it. You know, there's a big argument, what exactly was the tree of knowledge of good and evil? You can make lots of arguments for lots of... different things. Fig would be a great argument because that's why they found fig leaves right over there. The Zohar's understanding is that it was grapes. Why? Because it's the fruit of the grapes. In terms of your definition, not in terms of the Zohar's definition. You say a bore priya eitz on a grape. On a grape, you say bore priya eitz, so it's a tree. So according to the Zohar, what kind of fruit causes confusion between good and evil? Eitz hadaat tov v'ra. So which means what kind of fruit can cause you to be confused? What is good and what is evil? So that is the fruit of the vine. I'll read to you a little bit of what the Zohar says. I'll read it to you in English. And Noach began, he planted a vineyard. If you want the page on this, this is in page 73a and then B. Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi differ to the origin of this vine. One said it came from the Garden of Eden, Noah now planted it here. The other said it had been planted on the earth before the flood, and Noah plucked it now and replanted to it. But that's also an interesting thing. Is this a remnant all the way back to the Garden of Eden? Is this really the same plant or not? On the same day, it blossomed, ripened, and bore forth grapes. Is that interesting to you? What does that remind you of? What? It also reminds us of a very Garden of Eden-like of existence, where everything is perfect and everything happens immediately. Noach then pressed then wine, drank of it, and became drunken. Which, according to this all takes place the same day. The Zohar then, which by the way means that now, after the flood, Noach tries to revert back to the Garden of Eden, which by the way has really been a subtext all the way through. His father said it already, there's a curse, and we have to get back to before the curse. But what's the problem? Again, it's both the way the Zohar articulates it, but for that matter, it's black and white in the Torah. His father talks about him bringing about comfort from the curse of our hands and for the land which is working. When Noach becomes a person who works the land, it does not work out very well for him. Of all things that he plants, what does he plant? He plants a vineyard. By the way, I have no question why he plants a vineyard. He's depressed. Why is he depressed? He just lived through the Holocaust. He's depressed because he's a survivor. What does he do with his depression? He drinks. Why does he drink? To forget about what he has just seen. It's not a very simple thing. Noach doesn't... I mean, it's one thing to survive. It's another thing to live having survived. Isn't that interesting? And it's,
yeah,
so,
why would he bring
right. So I'm saying that then becomes this real... So the question of all things to plant, right afterwards, of all things to plant, he plants the vine. So as I said, the Zohar then goes through much more theologically, why specifically this, and he's trying to fix the sin of Adam, but he fails. He fails. But at the end, that's what you have to end up saying, that Noah ends up becoming a failure. But as I said, let's just wrap this up. The interesting thing about Noah is not just the animals, and not just the flood, and not just the ark, and not just the survival and so on. The interesting thing about Noach is right there when he's named. That's the first thing which is interesting, and that's why we spent the whole time today with Noach's name. What was his father thinking? What did we find? We found some commentaries, Ibn Ezra saying he was a prophet, that he realized such a thing. Others saying, based on Midrash, he was not a prophet. Some claiming it was a prayer that his father had said. What was different now? So some suggested maybe now Adam had died and they felt that now the curse is over now that Adam is dead. We find suggestions that they looked at Noah and saw something different. What did they see? Perhaps he was circumcised. We find this whole subtext in terms of his hands. Why do they all give these interpretations about his hands? Because that's what his father said. That from the sadness of our hands, so they said there must have been something different about his hands, and including this wonderful tradition about Noah being the first one to actually have fingers instead of hoofs. Although I have to go back and say, perhaps Noah in a certain sense goes back to Adam. Noah becomes like Adam before the sin. And this whole idea in rabbinic literature of animal-like tendencies is not an evolutionary discussion, it's rather a behavior discussion. It's rather about the tension of man, about how animal-like we are, about how human we are. And when man is told that he has to actually plow with thorns and thistles, the midrashic understanding of that is that now we become the animal who's planting. We now are the animal. We're the ones who have to plant. And then we have this whole, therefore, discussion of the animal that now will no longer listen to mankind. The shore won't listen. But Lamanya Noach Shurcha, that's Noach again. Noach is the one who gets the animals to listen. How do we know Noach gets the animals to listen? Well, they all listen to him and they get on the boat. So it's just interesting how the various midrashim are all looking at the name of Noach, looking at this idea of Yadayim, and trying to make sense or larger sense out of these little hints that we're getting. But again, sadly, ultimately, when it comes to Noach's working the land, which his father had foreshadowed or prophesied or prayed about all those years ago, when it comes to Noach's working the land, at that point we find failure. And by the way, that's what I want to say again. We find this interesting parallel with Adam. Adam succeeds with the animals of giving them all names. Noach succeeds with the animals bringing them to the boat. Adam fails when he tries to distinguish between which fruit to eat from and which not to eat from, and Noach fails as far as which fruit to plant or not and which to eat from and so on, and therefore Noach's failure becomes, I would say, a reverberation of Adam's failure, and that's why we need to move on to the next chapter and introduce Avram Avinu, but that we'll wait for next week. Shabbat Shalom.